Hello, everyone. My name is Taylor.
And I'm Kelly.
And we are the co-hosts of Jumping Bomb Audio, the number one show all about the world of Joshi Pro Wrestling. Episodes drop every other Monday, where we discuss the biggest Joshi news, review shows, and preview the hottest upcoming Joshi action.
So whether you're a new fan or an old fan, we've got something here for you at Jumping Bomb Audio.
Check us out on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Kids, you like professional wrestling, we like professional wrestling too. In the news, WWE quarter one financials, the lazy river of wrestling criticism, wrestling every damn day this week. The hell?
Dude, it's like endless.
An Invader Club, Dan Severn versus Tarzan Goto, Nove's pick from 1995. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is Chris Novembrino. I'm just going to read this. Cydex OPA solution should not be utilized to process any urological instrumentation used to treat patients with a history of bladder cancer. In rare instances, Cydex OPA solution has been associated with anaphylaxis-like reactions in bladder cancer patients undergoing repeated cystoscopies. No reason. Oh, I'm going to sue.
Yeah, I asked, and I said, if you're not, you're wild. Oh.
Yeah, so after my seizure last week, I got home and I did a little, as my doctor calls it, Google foo, and I found this paper about anaphylaxis and cystoscopies. And so I found out that the author of the paper has a practice in my area, in Orange County, called. They go, oh, we just happen to have an appointment that dropped out today. If you can be here by 2:30, otherwise you're going to need to wait 6 weeks. Guess who was on the road to Orange County immediately?
Yeah.
And he goes, yeah, that's obviously what this is. Why is that? Is that clinic using this solution? And so we called. And they are. So that's how my week's going. It's both the best and worst week of my life, because now I gotta go doctor shopping and all this other stuff.
Yeah, you
again.
Gotta go doctor. I mean, you know, it's like, obviously in the acute, this is more bad than good, but with the potential to be more good than bad on the back end.
My retirement fund is smiling. That's
I know, right? Like, that's the second you said this to me. I was just like, man. I mean, you know, you and I like talking, you know, financial stuff and economic stuff. And yes, with an egg like that, one could be sitting pretty. Yes, one could be thinking about the next, you know, the next 25 years a little bit.
Although yeah. I looked at the rules, and they've made some in the state to help the medical community stay away from trial lawyers, which ticks me off. So there's a cap on certain parts. But this is an obvious, we're going to settle.
Yeah.
And not go to trial on this.
You're
going to
get a bag on this.
I'm going to get a bag, yes. This will be a good down payment for wherever I choose to live next, because I'm getting the hell out of L.A. It has gone from 60-something a couple days ago to 98 right now where I live, and I'm just like, this is insane.
Well, I thought you were just talking about prices. I mean, I was talking to my parents out. No, I was talking to my parents out in Texas today, and they live in a house that is slightly smaller than mine. Maybe it's about the same size as mine. And their house currently is over twice the valuation of my house. And I mean, there's just certain parts of the country.
Dallas is a hot market or thereabouts.
There's just certain parts of the country where, I mean, if you don't already have something owned, the idea of renting around until you can own something is just no longer becoming tenable.
So to give you the lay of the land right now in terms of what's going on, Backlash is currently going on.
Yeah, I watched the finish of the Becky Lynch and Lyra Valkyria match, which ended up actually, surprisingly, Jeff, in a Lyra retention after Becky gets disqualified for not breaking a hold, and Lyra's allowed to retain her belt.
I did not have that on my sheet. I came in, and right before I gave Chris the link for this, I was watching the four-way for the United States title, and Jeff Cobb has made his appearance known working with Solo, which Solo Sikoa, so he's going to be part of the Bloodline. Much to the confusion of Jacob Fatu, he is not known as Jeff Cobb, though. They're just saying this man, so that means he's getting a WWE name.
Oh, yeah, he's going to get a...
Slappy Madu or something like that.
Yeah, no, right. Right. No, he is going to get some sort of Samoan-y name.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. I don't think he's going to be Joey Samoa, but, you
Joey Samoa would be awesome, to be honest.
Joey Samoa, yeah.
Yes. Oddly enough, though, man, looking at that, Jeff Cobb looks small next to these guys. Like,
dude,
I mean, he's
that was
wide.
That was his problem when he came out as Matanza, and I was in a minority opinion back then, but I just thought the way they had built up the Matanza character in season one of Lucha Underground, Jeff Cobb, yeah, he's wide, totally, right? But he did the height. You needed the height, and the height's not there. He's like, I don't know, maybe an inch taller than me.
He's just
massive.
Yeah, no, he's like 5'10", but he's like 350 pounds, so he's like a square.
I know, it's crazy. Yeah,
but
like
walking up walking up the aisle with Jacob Fatu and Solo Sikoa, you're just like, oh, he's just a third one of those types of guys, and it's like nothing really intimidating or anything about him either. That's the weird thing to me on WWE television.
No, WWE. I mean, I would actually argue it's on both sides of the roster right now, the women and the men, but like, there's especially in the undercard, a lot of the another one of those guys. Guys.
Yes. Yeah,
yeah, we'll talk about that a lot when we get to NXT.
Update from last week, because we didn't get to all the cuts. Not mentioned, it was, and that came out later, Javier Bernal, Big Body Javi, Danny Palmer, and Riley Osborne, formerly of Chase U. I remember Danny Palmer had that first match. Everybody's like, yeah, she had a pretty good match, and then nothing out of that. Riley's an interesting concept because he got high marks everywhere, but he's been in the system longer than you think. He is, and I think that's what has to do with this, because they got rid of any holdovers that weren't on the main roster.
They're already, yeah.
From NXT UK, and Riley Osborne, under another name, was originally at NXT UK, even though he's not British. He was, you know, he was like an enhancement talent over there. I mean, he's only 27. He's still very, very good, but kind of surprised. I wouldn't be shocked if he came back, but he's also, look, and I hate to say this derivatively, but he is in the land of giants. He's a small athletic guy. And if you want that, you go to AEW.
You know what his blessing is, though, in disguise, is that his presentation was so nondescript that if he came back up with a strong gimmick or a strong character, he could very easily find a second leg of his career in the same path that so many undercard, midcard guys kind of had that first run. It didn't quite happen for them in their 20s. And then in their late 20s, early 30s, they think about a gimmick. The conquistador or whatever it is, not that, but not the conquistador, but you come up with some sort of strong Razor Ramon like gimmick. Yes. And that Scott Hall is actually a really good example of this, obviously a completely different build, but this
is a
guy
who doesn't work for smaller guys either. I mean, all the guys who have come back.
Tell that to Macho Man Randy Savage. Tell that to Roddy Piper.
Well, Savage was on like the juice. He was giant.
I know, but Savage was also like 5'8" and was able to get over on size by the capes and stuff in the presentation.
Yeah, I'm just saying the numbers are mostly, you know, your Bray Wyatts, your Razor Ramones, you know, those, like, even Elias, if you want to go that far.
And we also just talked about Jeff Cobb, who is, you know, that height, yes, and huge, but that's not doing anything for him because he didn't have a personality.
He's a square.
Like, look, it is a common thesis of mine on this show, but like, wrestling is about the personalities, and what we are watching in the ring in these climaxes is the fight scene in, yes, a little mini movie. It's the fight scene is as dramatic as the build to it. Like, the actual sword fighting in Empire Strikes Back is not killer stuff. It's the fact that you're completely invested in Luke and Vader fighting at that moment.
TKO came out with their Q1 financials. Parent company of WWE and UFC announced a $1.268 billion in revenue for the first quarter of 2025 and $58,408,000 in profits. This was based on strong gains from WWE and UFC, including the effects of the new Netflix deal, as well as the new SmackDown deal in USA and NXT deal on CW, all of which were big increases from the deals they had 1 year ago. WWE revenue went from $316.7 million in the first quarter last year to $391 million this year, an increase of 23.6%. UFC, $303 million to $359 million, increase of 14.9%. as they are on the same existing media contracts. From a profit standpoint, WWE-UFC combination went from $234.5 million in losses during the quarter last year based on allocating the money for the Kung Lee lawsuit settlement to $165.2 million this year. They also decreased operating costs by $38 million due to corporate cuts because of WWE and UFC duplicating more jobs and work. EBITDA, which is a phony metric, went from $142.2 million to $193.9 million, again due to decreasing operating costs, blah blah blah. Free cash flow, which is important, went from $44.9 million to $162.8 million, and that was due to $100.3 million in prepayments related to work related to the 2026 FIFA World Cup. This is also during a quarter where they spent $125 million in actual payments to fighters in the Kung Lee settlement. Chris, get paid, I guess.
Yeah, right. And as you've been doing this, I've been watching Penta do his entrance here, making his way to the ring for his match.
Is he strutting?
They really lingered on this entrance. Yes. What is notable, or like what I'm observing here, is, dude, it's like such a difference in his presentation between here and AEW, where the Lucha Bros were just this afterthought. So they would come out at a wide angle, and like, here we have a close up of Penta the entire time. And dude, they let him like high five basically everyone. Like, I mean, he even, you know, is even being playful with a Dominic Mysterio fan. There's more personality here in this walk down to the ring than we got like the last year, at least.
I call him Sports Entertainment Penta on this podcast.
He's built for this. This is where he always should have been.
Catchphrase, mask. He does that dumb shit with the glove.
Yes. He's smiling. It's very weird.
It's very weird, isn't it?
There's been a lot of smiling. He smiles a lot more now.
Not complaining about who he's working with, probably. That helps.
Yeah.
Ernesto Campo, the editor of Super Luchas, reported this week that Alberto El Patron, El Hijo de Dr. Wagner Jr., La Parca, the new one, formerly Brazo del Oro Jr., who debuted in a match over the weekend, El Hijo del Vikingo, Flamer, Maravilla, La Hiedra, and Nino Hamburguesa, had signed new deals with WWE for the AAA promotion. This does not mean they're necessarily appearing on WWE television, and God help them if Alberto Del Patron shows up on WWE television. But yes, they are solidifying the people for AAA.
I'm looking forward to seeing a little Nino Hamburguesa on my television here, potentially.
I am, I'm fascinated by this new La Parca because I love the La Parcas. They're my thing. I like them. He ain't LA Park. You're never going to be that dude.
God, that dude.
But it'll do.
That dude was just chaotic charisma. We need to do a Vader Club with La Parca here.
I've done one with him.
Yeah, we have done one. Yeah, I think we're going to need a little bit more crazy La Parca.
Okay, this week, since it's my turn, I'll see if there's another La Parca psychosis combination. Because they are one of my favorite teams together.
I like them a lot together. I like them when they're good, and I like them when they're bad. Like they're equally kind of entertaining in both facets.
I think I gave the six man at that Halloween Havoc that one time where it's like Silver King's doing the Laparca dance too as Laparca's doing it. Whatever. Well, I'll do my research on that. Yeah. I'll end with this. From AEW, The Righteous, Dutch and Vincent asked for their release, and it was granted. They had mostly worked Ring of Honor the past 2 years since being signed. Bill Kars, 38, Vincent Marsaglias, 39. I like, don't get me wrong, I don't think they're main eventers, but I do like The Righteous as kind of gimmicky mid-card tag team type thing.
Yeah.
But boy, did they get killed in that MJF segment they were in. You remember the one where it's like MJF, they're doing the Brochachos stuff with Adam Cole. And so he goes in there to fight by himself. He ends up like putting one head's ass up the, or one head, other's head up the other's ass or something like that. He just absolutely buries The Righteous.
Yeah.
Like I thought there was something with like Jake Roberts that could have happened because they're both kind of in a similar vein, you know, with the Murder Hawk Monster and stuff, but just never. AEW gets very bored with character stuff very, very quickly.
Yes. No, and that's like the thing. If you are a character wrestler and you're thinking about going to AEW, I think The Righteous actually become a really good, because there's several others I'm sure we could come up with, but The Righteous is a good cautionary tale of here's a strong character gimmick where it, one bad week of presentation, like, for example, MJF shoving your face up your tag team partner's ass, can never be undone because you'll never have a vehicle to undo it.
Yeah, it's weird because coming out of Fightful this week, there's a report that this is Willow Nightingale's contract year. And she's an interesting case because I don't think WWE will want her because of cosmetics,
which is maybe not. I'll tell you though,
but she is a character person, totally. But she's over with AEW, but it's also one of those things that kind of limits her a bit in AEW. It's like you can do a Chris Statler and her match slash, you know, Mercedes match with her. And, you know, but then she goes back to doing like Statlander segments on TV, and it's just like there's not much there after that. It's one of those weird dichotomies. Like, she's a star for the AEW crowd, but she doesn't have the ceiling of, say, like a Toni Storm or a Mercedes.
No, and look, if WWE sees the potential in her, I see it, because it's like in WWE's system, there's a number of people where she can work as the underdog, and I think that actually would really go a long way to getting her over. Don't underestimate the ability of WWE's audience to get in on the gimmick in really short order. It does seem like they smarten up on gimmicks relatively quickly, like within a month. Everyone knows Sarah Mieto and all that.
I'll give you that. The NXT crowd would eat it up.
Totally.
But we also know, between you and me, and Triple H also subscribes to the same Vince bad habit, that David and Goliath was booked poorly. And there's no way that David would ever kick Goliath's ass. Like, you see this now with, like, every small woman on the roster. And I brought this up last week with Casey Catanzaro and Caden Carter. It's like they always have to, because they were heels for a very short time. You remember they turned them, but they do this with Nikki Cross. They do this with Alexa Bliss. Tiny women or like not the tall, jacked up bodybuilder types have to be heels because, oh, we can't go for an undersized baby face because nobody will believe it. It's so weird to me.
Yes. I mean, that is potentially the one thing that might prevent Willow Nightingale from, you know, clicking.
She's going back to AEW. Tony's going to overpay her.
I think at this point, Tony's going to want to overpay people for psychology reasons, because letting too many people walk will look bad and also will hurt him.
Yeah. And that's the other thing is that then the chatter starts.
Right.
How could you not? Or like, God knows, I don't want to read. Willow Nightingale's a turncoat because Tony made her, and then she used it to go over to WWE. Shut up.
I mean, what happened to being pro-worker, right? Is it the whole thing like the worker's supposed to try to maximize themselves at the job and then screw the company over and then try to maximize? Like, at a certain point, right, you're either pro-worker or you're pro-company. And it is very interesting sometimes with the AEW turncoat narratives, who they're coming from, and typically where their sympathies lie with this weird, with this notable exceptional case.
Yeah, and it's, well, you know, good company versus bad company, and I don't, you know me, I don't get into that. Look.
Company bad, I'm pro-worker.
But it's also, like, it's one of those things where it's like, man, you could have stayed at AEW and had hard matches on your body for the same amount of money. I'm just thinking about, oh, they can't have the good matches that they had in AEW. I'm like, I think most of them just want to have like a soft time and make a lot of money. I don't think they want to have the bangers. Some people do. So it's, you know, it's that whole art versus commerce thing. Don't get
right.
me wrong. Like Will Ospreay wants to have his bangers, and that's fine. You go
but,
ahead.
But it's also, I mean, it's also, especially for these mid-card talents in AEW, right? Like that is a false construction of the choice because
yes.
You're not necessarily guaranteed, especially if you're in mid-card hell in that company, you're not guaranteed to be making quote-unquote art. You're just as likely to be having your face shoved into your tag team partner's ass.
Looking at you, Top Flight.
No, I mean, seriously, right? Like, if you're at that level, if you're at the Dork Order level, right, you are always at risk of becoming a punchline, being used as goobers and scrubs in the brander milieu of whatever is happening in the main event scene right now.
How dare you, sir? Will Ospreay told me this week that Hangman Page elevated the Dark Order and showed them how to be cowboys.
How many of them are still in the company? How many?
Four.
Yeah,
four, three.
Four out of 10. Yeah. Yes. Oh yeah. Yeah. That, you know, if he's a basketball player and you're shooting 4 out of 10, that's not bad. If you're baseball,
5 if you count Anna J.
4 out of 10. If you're a roofer, though, and 4 out of 10 roofs you get right, you go back to prison.
That'll do it for the news now for the Lazy River Wrestling Criticism. Whatever you watch, whatever you had time for. As I said in the opening, yes, we had WWE Monday, we had NXT Tuesday, we had AEW Wednesday, we had AEW Collision Thursday, we had SmackDown Friday. Right now, Backlash is going. I think the only thing really left to be interesting in Backlash is going to be that McAfee-Gunther match. And
I am looking forward to that. Carlito, the true leader of the Judgment Day, has made his way down to the ring, which means he's bringing in, and you can see the rest of the Judgment Day is following in suit. They are executing Carlito's plan.
May I say that I don't mind that Carlito doesn't do a lot of great matches and still gets paid.
Doesn't have to. He's the leader of the Judgment Day.
He gets speared through tables by Bron Breakker. I'd dies for millions of dollars. I'm happy with this. He can do that. Yeah. I'll let you start on this. I got nothing big to go over.
Okay. I'm going to start off with, honestly, the opening match of NXT here this week.
Okay.
Dark State versus Joe Hendry, Hank, and Tank. This was a black hole of charisma. I just think that Dark State, with the exception of Osiris Griffin, offer absolutely nothing. Cutler James, a.k.a. Pants Guy, is a generic
pants.
Dude. Pants guy. He's the pants guy. And Jeff, when they give you the pants, that means you have bad legs. That's WWE code for this guy has bad legs.
You skip leg day, don't you? Yes.
Yes. So we're putting you in the pants, and the pants are too poofy, and so they actually make him look even more ill-defined in his upper body, and he's got nothing in terms of offense. Dion Lennox is boring. The only guy in this match who was kind of showing some personality, and I think that's kind of the story of the match, and I do appreciate that they're doing little smaller stories. Osiris Griffin. Clearly, you know, he's a big dude. He's a very, very large dude, even in an organization where we've got a lot of these guys who all kind of fit into a similar sort of typecast. You know, Cyrus Griffin does stand out. There might be something there with him. But this Dark State faction is a wet fart. They have absolutely no personality. And at this point, I'm begging for Trick Williams to become their leader because it might give them the hope of being something. But absent that, if it's just going to be dude on the outside, you know, doing things, this faction sucks. And Hank and Tank, I got to tell you, when they're not going 100%, they suck. The only thing that makes them good is when they are going on full tilt, when they are sort of like in like desperation mode. If we don't wrestle as hard as we possibly can, we're going to get fired. When they're not talented enough to just kind of go through the motions at a 75% match. They need to be having 90% matches every single time.
Yeah, they're a Michaels Jannetty team, and I think Tank is the Michaels. I think that's the problem here. No, but you are correct. I'm smiling because I'm thinking about these stories from like years ago. It's either Jericho or The Miz, and they were wearing pants at the time. And then Vince, I guess, saw one of them in their underwear or something. He goes, "Why are you hiding those beautiful quads?" And so that's how he made him wear trunks after that. I think it was Jericho. I think that's the story there. I just went, it's a little too homoerotic for my taste, Vince. Thanks, but okay. Vince is a total body guy, and it's just so creepy. I am going to show some love for SmackDown, which I watched last night, or parts of it. They are getting very, very close to a SmackDown 6 tag team division. They had a match of all things. And yeah, this is sort of a demotion for two of the guys, but it was Andrade and Rey Fénix versus the Garzas. Banger.
That was cool. That was a great match.
Banger. And then the impromptu Fraxium versus the Street Profits. Now, it was a very good match, and yeah, Fraxium got the win. We need to think. I don't know how, because again, WWE's the land of giants. Friggin' the Street Profits look like grown ass men next to everybody in this division right now, though. And they're all 6'5", 6'6", able to, like, move like gazelles.
Dude, Dawkins is hella mobile these
days. Dawkins has not gotten the love for improving.
Dude, the work. I know,
right? His work and his cardio and his body and everything. Because everybody was like,
four or five years ago, I was saying they needed to cut bait on him. It was just never going to get there. And he's put in the work.
I think he's better than Montez now.
If you had said that a few years ago, I would have thought that
it'd
was
be blasphemy. It would be blasphemy.
No. But now I think there's a very legitimate case for, like, Tez is a more complete promo, I guess.
Yes. Yes.
But that honestly might even be a thing where we just haven't seen Dawkins get enough time to carry a segment.
And Tez does like amazing aerial things. So I am not denigrating Montez Ford at all, because I saw him as a world champion at one point. I'm just saying, bell to bell for the work rate types, Dawkins is kicking ass, man.
Dude, that handspring and stuff, yes, at his size, to see that, and it looked good and fluid. I saw something that I was really impressed with. I mean, look, there's WWE television regularly has some very nice matches on it. Like every week, I mean, you know, there's a lot of TV, so like, yes, you should hope so. But like, man, the improvement of what is a good match on these shows from like 5 years ago is astronomical.
Your turn, sir.
All right. I think I'm going to just kind of work my way through NXT here a little bit more. Okay. All right. So, because I've got two more points here on NXT, I think.
I have a couple too.
So actually, I got three, I guess, technically on NXT.
Right,
but we'll start off with Miles Bourne getting the nod for the world title shot here. I think this has the potential to be a bit of a coming out party for this young man. I think the work is there. I think obviously he's not going to beat Obafemi here, but the crowd does like Baby Randy. And following the match with Cena, if Orton does indeed, you know, choose to take like a little fiver off of the main roster and come down to NXT for a few weeks and like give Miles Bourne the rub, like even a 1 week appearance where Randy cameos with Miles Bourne and they tag team, that would be elevating for this young man. I like him. And I was very excited when they got to the finish of that match, the final four or whatever. I was very excited to just see a new guy finally get some burn. We've done the Joe Hendry thing. We've done the Trick Williams thing. We've done, like, you know, everyone, even D'Angelo's had his shot at Obafemi. Like that NXT world really has been played out in its entirety with all the possible configurations that were remotely interesting, more or less having been done. It is time to introduce new people into that main event scene and rotate and freshen it up. And Femi does need to go eventually, but on the way, we need to get some new characters. And Miles Bourne, I think Miles Bourne has potential, man. It might be too much. He might not work not having people to play off of. The one thing I do pause on with him in his upward trajectory is right now the promos are trading on tasteful and tasteful and earnestly funny jokes, not at his expense, that center around his deafness. And they require other people to be part of that joke structure, right? Like, you have to have friends who know what's up and then a hapless dupe. So you have to have like a straight man and a zany man. Like, you essentially need three figures constantly in order to make those jokes work. Again, they're all tasteful. I'm not qualming them at all. Because they're never done.
They used to be not tasteful. So
no, but
step up.
Yeah. But recently, no, like they've all been not done at Miles Bourne's expense, but rather at the expense of other people being stupid or assuming that, you know, like whatever. Right. But my question becomes, okay, once we get past the yucks of, yes, Miles Bourne is hearing impaired, what's the promo going to be? How is this guy going to carry these engagements and segments?
I don't even want him to mention his deafness in a promo.
Yes, there's some interesting questions in his characterization and presentation. Like in the main, when he comes up to the main roster, I might try to go for a reset where I make him a silent assassin for a good long time. You know, not Kane with a voice box or some bullshit, but like, just, this is a man who does not speak like often. He views actions as much more valuable than words, and he can even, you know, like that sort of thing. Cause I don't know.
I don't want the pandering.
That he can carry 10 minutes.
That's
I don't. Yes, I don't want the pandering. And the pandering's 1 week, right? Like, you can't do a year. You can't do 52 weeks out of that. You need to have something else. And I don't want this guy to get overexposed for 10 minutes. And I certainly do not want to watch. I'll turn it off if I watch an episode where the people are screaming what at him. So.
I loved the No Quarter Catch Crew Obafemi vignette. I did. I thought it was smart. I thought everybody played their role well. I wish they'd give Maddie Rynkowski more to do, because once she joined this crew, she's got nothing to do right now, which sucks, and she's far too talented to do that. Charlie Dempsey being an arrogant, well, you've won the title shot for me stuff. Love it. When Oba came in, And God, I forgot his name already. What's his name again?
Charlie Dempsey?
Miles Bourne. And Miles Bourne plays completely into the, oh, weren't you just saying this beforehand? And then pretending, oh, I couldn't hear you kind of thing. Great. Obafemi saying he no longer wants to do three ways. Yes, please.
Yes, that was so funny. He's like, no, I don't do that anymore. One thing I loved, everyone learning something. The past is relevant.
Yes.
No, I did that shit. That's terrible. I'm not doing that again.
And the Battle Royal was a lot of fun. I don't like these kinds of battle royals typically because I'm a little too old school on things. I want to watch guys actually struggling to throw people over instead of doing set pieces. But good to see Timothy Thatcher again in an NXT ring. Kind of miss old Tim and his dullness. Sean Legacy and Javon Evans.
Sean Legacy was quite excellent.
Do not bring these two together too quickly and overdo it. But at some point, I want the one-on-one. And I even want these two against Fraxium in some way at some point. That guy was awesome. And doing it with the rest of, with was it the Level Up kids that we've already seen between Thatcher and Swipe Right, who had been on a previous week. I thought that was a good way to introduce Sean Legacy. He's not the best wrestler in the world, but seeing the artist formerly known as Elias come in and do his entrance and get that pop for the NXT crowd, I enjoyed that. I did.
Yeah. The TNA relationship with NXT, I think, has been about as good as anyone could have possibly envisioned it. It's generative. It's obviously good for the TNA wrestlers who are coming over and getting on WWE television because they're getting – it's good for the workers. They're increasing their name recognition, which, again, if you're worker-minded, will help them with contract negotiation because more people know who the hell they are, and that sort of stuff does matter. And it does – I mean, it gives – let's say what's he, Ezekiel now, or I forget what he's
Elijah.
Yeah, right. So it gives a guy like that an opportunity to get back in front of the audiences and bookers or whatever, agents in the backstage go, he's still over. Let's have him come back on and do a couple of weeks. That could be the start of a door opening. That could be a good thing. That could be a really good thing for talent. And I'm going to get into my next point. Look, this has been a generative relationship and it gives people to get eyes on you. That can be a good thing. Theoretically, it could be a bad thing. Like when we get to our main event here.
You're next. So where do you want to go?
Let's talk about that main event.
Okay.
Jordynne Grace versus Julia in one of the more, I think it's fair to say one of the more interesting matches of the year. In my estimation, because during this match, there are at least two, by my count, two ones that I would consider audible and strong botches done by Jordynne Grace to Julia, where Julia ends up landing on her neck in very, very unfavorable and uncharitable ways. And the first one begins a process of the crowd turning Julia babyface effectively for the duration of this matchup and rallying behind her, getting to a point where there's a dueling chant where Jordynne Grace gets overtaken by Julia chants. Let's go Jordynne very quickly gets drowned out by Let's Go Julia. And Corey Graves, for his part, I think if one more botch had happened, he was going to take off his headset and get in the ring.
I'll add a little context to this for you. It won't change your mind per se. I do agree. I think Corey needs to keep his poker face a little bit more. He gets a little bit in his feels when he sees a possible neck injury. That said, that first one,
everyone saw that neck injury,
but that was nothing. That was a visual, according to Brian Alvarez, that was more a visual trick because of the hair on Julia. Her neck never hit the mat on that.
No, it more looked like her head bent in. It's like she tucked her chin.
That's the second one, I think.
Okay, so she comes down after that first one and she's favoring her head badly. Like after they come out, they get her, and then Jordynne immediately picks her back up. There are sort of like three issues, right?
I would say the flapjack spot.
The flapjack. Yeah, that kind of corkscrew flapjack.
But that was on Julia partially because she
tucked.
She tucked, right.
Yes, yeah, but I think she tucked because she wasn't even sure how she was going to land because she was, I mean, the way Jordan, I mean, watch, look, like that flapjack looked like it could have went like three different ways depending on how, like, I don't even know if Jordan knew how that was going to land. And I certainly don't know 10 times out of 10 that that flapjack lands with the same spin twist, flippy do gimmick, you know, so like, that was issue one. And then, I mean, for me, I think Jordan compounded her issues and certainly did herself no favor with sympathies on commentary or with the crowd by immediately going back into action.
Yeah.
And I think the referee made a misstep here. The referee at that point, because you could still do this all very much within a kayfabe setting, should have backed Jordan Grace off to check on the competitor. They have done this before in a WWE match. This is not some sort of unheard of spot here. But that would have given Julia a second to get her wits about her, make sure everything's okay, and give some sort of visual give some sort of audible confirmation, hey, I'm good to keep going, before we pick her up and immediately go into a stalling vertical suplex driver thing.
Julia tweeted Wednesday, I can't remember which. That was a lot of fun. I can't wait to get it back into the ring with her. Let's do it again soon, kind of a thing. Like, so for her part, she seemed to have fun. I understand
but
your
Jordan
points.
Jordan Grace did not seem to be thrilled with her performance either.
No, and
like, especially after that Michinoku driver, right? There's that two count right after the Michinoku driver. And it's like, she comes up and she's like acting like two and, you know, has a sad face. But she ain't sad about that. She's sad because she completely, like, pile drove Julia on that Michinoku driver.
Now is the time where I will bring up this point. Because I was talking to you about this. Jordan Grace is absolutely ice cold since coming from TNA. And it's all about her presentation and being the quote-unquote juggernaut and whatnot. And it's not just her now. All these people that had shine about 2 months ago, Kehlani Jordan, Zarya, Sol Ruka, I'd even throw Carmen Petrovich and who'd Carmen face? Danny Parker.
No, she fight Jada Parker.
Are all these one-note...
Lola Vice.
Lola Vice, too.
I love it's Lola. Just, I know, it's terrible.
They are one-note sambas, as I put it. You know, all apologies to Hugh Masekela. They don't do anything other than their gimmick. Jada Parker comes out and she's angry. Carmen Petrovich has a sword and does kicks in people's faces, I guess. Lola Vice dances and speaks in broken English. Jordan Grace, I don't know. And then we have Zarya and Sol Ruka, who, like, I know that they're teasing this, but like that long forlorn look between Kehlani and Sol during that match. I just, no.
Well,
all these women are.
I think at this point, what they need to do with the Zarya Sol thing is, I think Sol needs to turn heel.
She's about to.
I think so too. I mean, because. I'll put it this way. For me, it rang false, the forlorn look between Kehlani and Sol, because Kehlani has been turning heel for months. So it should have been Kehlani slaps Sol, and that's what sets off Zarya.
I mean, Thea Hale has nothing to do, and all it is all women hate each other, and they're all catty, and they're all in the locker room at the same time being catty to one another. That's all those vignettes are, and they're dumb. And they're one note, and they're stupid, and I hate them, Chris. I hate them.
Yeah, no, this characterization on the NXT roster is just, it's devoid of anything. I mean, right down to Stephanie Vaquera, who we love, but she comes out dressed like a succubus from Diablo. She is called La Primera, and... that is her personality. That, you know, then she has these excellent matches. It is not like, it is hard to care about people beyond a certain point if all they are is a nickname, a move set, and a theme song.
I will push back because Raw Stephanie Vaquera, on Monday, where it's like people came out to attack, and she has that kind of that smug, oh, isn't that precious that you're coming out to try and beat me up type of thing. She has that kind of charisma where it's kind of like she's almost amused at these underlings who are going to try and take her out or whatever. But
this is specifically an indictment of the NXT presentation, where I just feel like I've been watching the same one-note promo from her and whoever she's against over and over and over again.
Thursday, I'm going to go there. I really liked, I'm liking this build between FTR and Nigel McGuinness. Where Nigel, I mean, it's one of those tropes that is as old as wrestling itself. The retired wrestler who, look, I'm retired and I'm now a broadcaster. Please don't mess with me. But if you do, I'm going to kick your ass. And it went down fairly well on Thursday. Because Nigel, the thing that's making this awesome in so many ways is that Nigel says he's retired, but he's still a heel. So he still gets like a verbal dig in. So
he can't. Yeah, he can't help himself. Yeah.
So Dax and Daniel Garcia are fighting in the crowd. They fight back to Tony and Nigel. And Dax notices this, and he kind of like he pie faces him in the back of the head type of a thing, and pushes his headset off. And Nigel goes, "Look, you know, he's doing the I'm gonna be calm. I'm not gonna do anything. I'm retired." Like your hair. That just sets off Dax. Stokely's not doing funny Stoke. He's being serious Stoke. I'm liking this combination right now. It's good. It's just a shame it's on Collision.
Yeah, but right.
Something has to be, I guess.
I know. It really is a shame, because the Nigel McGuinness, like for me, if I was looking at this FTR Nigel McGuinness thing, like the Chekhov's gun here is, you have Bryan Danielson show back up for the save on Nigel McGuinness, and Nigel has to reluctantly accept the help of Bryan Danielson, the man he hates more than anyone on this planet.
Like, I'm here for Nigel and Daniel and Bryan Danielson versus FTR. I think
right. Awesome. No, I think that would be great. I mean, I would have, this is just a thing where I could imagine sitting down for an evening and just having so much fun writing out story stuff with like Nigel and Danielson needing to figure out how to trust each other. And, you know, like Nigel needing to somehow overcome his incredible, profound disdain of Bryan Danielson and actually help him at key moments, like having that be an important part of the story. Like Danielson gets in peril and it's up to Nigel to save him and become a good guy. Could be good stuff. But of course it's just going to be on Collision. It's going to be what it's going to be. Probably tied with Daniel Garcia.
You have a next one?
I guess we could, kick it over to the land of, Dynamite.
Okay.
Yeah. Now,
cause that's where I was going to go. Yeah. Mine.
Yeah. That's where we got to go. Don Callis's family is an absolutely incoherent mess of a faction. It's just, there's different guys who show up and come and go. Occasionally, he trades people for draft picks and cash considerations. The only two real constants are Kyle Fletcher and Takeshita, who have absolutely no chemistry with one another. They're just like two guys who stand side by side as though Don Callis selected them on the video game select a character screen, and that's his tag team that he's fielding for this upcoming tournament, because that's who he selected, Kyle Fletcher and Konosuke Takeshita. But I just don't get what, like, the only thing that I would argue is redemptive about Don Callis is that for reasons that are a bit of a mystery to me at this point, he has absolutely nuclear heat with that AEW fan base. He comes out and they won't shut up from the second he walks in front of them. But I'll be honest, it feels pretty unearned at this juncture. It feels like it's trading on past equity and past valuations, much, much less than it is, oh, well, he's white hot as a heel right now. And it's because over the last 6 months, he's been cutting Dynamite promo after Dynamite promo, where he has been making everyone hate him. you know, more than the most reviled person you could think of.
I'm going to go to the opening segment. Dave Meltzer took a little bit of heat on the internet, as he is wont to do, because he gives an opinion that's actually pretty good and everybody wants to jump down his throat. But he kind of said, and I'm paraphrasing here, is that he was kind of upset with Will Ospreay, and that this is something that's a problem with AEW, in that their stars don't dress like stars. They don't come out in suits. They don't look like main eventers. I think more of a problem is Kenny Omega and his gym shorts and Crocs, you know, to cut up lackadaisical 2-minute promo. But I understand his, he goes, Hangman's fine because he has the cowboy gimmick, but Ospreay needs to come out more serious. And everybody's like, well, he's wearing expensive sweatsuits and stuff. I'm like, you're missing the point that Dave's making here. But like, I really question sometimes how much they sit down and they think about segments and how they want people to react when it comes to what they want to say and the point they want to get across. Because I understand, ooh, we want to build some tension between Will Ospreay and Hangman Adam Page. I don't think you need to. And Will Ospreay coming out as again, Hangman Page coming out and turning his promo into I'm so sorry, I did all these bad things. Okay, great. I it's a character choice. I can go with it. Be a bit of a man about it and apologize instead of being a whinier. But
for me, it drives me crazy because it's like, he's not doing penance to the people he wronged.
Right.
He's going to the plebeians and going like, I have sinned and I am a sinner.
Yes. Absolve me of the bad things I do so I don't have to face the people I wrong.
Yeah, right. No, he's going to the masses so that they can be the river to wash away his sins rather than actually doing the work.
But Will Ospreay comes out, the first thing he says, sorry to interrupt your therapy session. Now, look, that is not the thing you want to say to somebody when you want to be liked, okay? And this crowd kind of turned on that statement at first. They're like, what?
What Hangman's doing out here is true, and we're trying to create a safe space for him.
Yes, we're trying to cry a crying
he's speaking
couch.
Speaking from his personal truth, you
he's
asshole.
Speaking his truth, yes. Please respect his boundaries. The point is relevant in that Ospreay can come out and go, look, buddy, I've been there, man. He needs to come out and be empathetic, which he gets to, but not before insulting him about sharing his feels in front of the, oh, sorry to interrupt. I mean, it's just as bad if you come out and go, sorry, you're in your feels a bit, you crying wussy.
Right. No, you know, and to this point, it honestly, like, it part of the issue is it's, for me, a bit scene-breaking because it's like, this is not why you would actually normally come out to talk to somebody. Like if you had like a friend who was going through a dark night of the soul, you have a few options. One, you can let them go through the dark night of the soul on their own, just, you know, figure it out. You could come in and lend some support and try to be a helping hand. But like, what you're not going to do is go like, hey, you know, I'm going to kind of like slap with one hand and pet with the other. Pet slap. You know.
Hey, you can be this weepy bitch right now, but I'm going to kick your ass at Double or Nothing. It's like, what are you doing? And then it's like, yes, we'll be a tag team.
No, it's like your friend's going through a breakup and your approach to consoling them is to show up and be like, Jeff, so you're crying like a little effing girl again here on the couch, all sobbing in your tears. You know, you're a good person. You have a lot to offer to people, and I think you're a swell guy. But also, Jeff, you're such a little ninny. Yeah, not up. Jesus. Like,
be a man, you wuss.
I know. So for me, like, using this, like, absurd construction, I find it a problem with Will Ospreay, right? Like, he comes off as me in that scene, alternately telling you to nut up and then also trying to console you and tell you that you're a good person, you're my friend, and there's a reason why I'm here, yeah, blah, 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 right? Like, it's this very disconnected thing, and it doesn't make Will Ospreay endearing. It doesn't make me want to hang out with Will right. Ospreay. Apparently, he's the type of guy who's going to alternatively be like, oh, Chris, you got another sad, depressive song about how life isn't working out for you. Actually, you know what? I really like the chord changes in this, and the solo that you're doing here is really cool. Is that a flanger? Dude, I love the panning. Oh, so you're going to cry again about how no one connects with you and you're all alone. But I love how you use the bass and you pan left and right and you're doing the stereo depth. That is so cool. Like, I don't want to be around that guy.
And then if you allow me the flip side of the coin, we get the Hurt Syndicate in the ring, and they're just where are the tag teams to challenge us? And right before they start this, we have the Leo Rush Action Andretti team come out just to sit down, not to challenge the Hurt Syndicate. Instead, we get Top Flight, who come out. You know, we haven't had the best of years this year. It's like, nobody cares. Nobody wants your weakness. Only to get punked.
And then MJF shoved one of their heads up the other one's ass.
Punked.
They're a tag team, punked. Jeff. They're a tag team, and they got annihilated by one guy. I don't care if he blindsided them. They, like, had HP2. As that happened, like MJF whopped one of them, and he went down with his little life bar and went bloop. And the other guy was like, oh, and then he got whopped and his life bar went down to nothing.
There's a difference, and I'm going to bring back a throwback 80s reference. So you'll excuse me if you guys don't exactly get this. But there's a difference between doing this to a team that is way out over their skis, like the Mulkeys.
But I was going to say the Mulkeys, yeah.
The Mulkeys come out, and they challenge the Hurt Syndicate, and then MJF comes out and beats the ever-living crap out of both of them. But if you are, say, Tim Horner and Brad Armstrong, the Lightning Express, and you have some cachet in terms of, yeah, you're an underdog babyface team, you're a champion in other companies, but maybe not Jim Crockett Promotions per se, and you come out, there is no way in hell you're letting one guy beat up both of you unless he is, I mean, even back then they wouldn't do that. Like it's so weird because people are so screwed up by the Attitude Era.
He wasn't even armed. It's not like he took a chair to them. He just walloped them. He
like Triple H used
them.
To do this to the tag champs to build them up, and it was stupid then. But yes, he beats up two guys who supposedly have a quote-unquote future in AEW, and they don't now. I'm sorry. Who cares about Top Flight now? Really?
Well,
I mean,
like,
he pucks them out, man.
These are the same guys that John Moxley scrubbed around a few months ago, too, right?
No. That was Private Party.
Oh, yeah, well, you could tell the difference.
No, you have a very excellent point, too. It's like, okay, you have these young, acrobatic, high flyers.
And they have no, I mean, and this is the same problem, you know, the NXT thing at one point I left out was, you've got a bunch of these guys kind of in that Osiris, you have Tysonite Tyreek, you have OTM, who are now back, Dark State has a lot, like, if you don't
characterize guys, yeah.
Right? No. It's guys who all cosmetically look the same ish. And like, you know, like I'm saying, you know, build everything, right? Like, and more importantly than that, have no defining characteristics about themselves that are distinguishable from the other people who you might kind of class together in that in terms of talent, whether it's big dudes who are power guys or small flippy guys who wear neon stuff. Like if you don't have a personality to distinguish yourself from that, no, Private Party is Top Flight is whoever else.
Like Jack Evans and Angelico.
And Leo Rush, yeah, you know.
Like Jack Evans and Angelico had a dynamic to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one's the big guy who does like submission. Jack Evans is a maniac who talks a lot of smack.
And
you know,
both of them are arrogant. Like they yes. No, they,
but
like
they're
the
different
neon,
kinds of arrogant.
Yes. But the neon begat, like the neon for them to me reflected a level of arrogance that both of them had.
Yes,
they're
I would
they're
agree.
The arrogant jerks who wear neon. You have like motorcycle guy, arrogant jerk, and then you have like extreme dude, arrogant jerk.
It's like an 80s commercial from you. Your turn if you have anything else.
Man, I don't know that I do.
I mean, the main roster is the main roster, and everything kind of came together for that Backlash show. It was fine. You know, Pat McAfee had another good promo, I thought.
Yes, I'm looking forward to McAfee's match against Gunther. It looks like we're actually, as we are wrapping up right now, we're going to be settling into McAfee versus Gunther. I think McAfee, look, the promos go on too long.
Yes.
He you know, does
he's loosey-goosey with them.
He's like a 5-1 ratio where it's like 5 good things, 1 bad thing. And that's the thing is, the 5-1, the ones start stacking up where you're kind of like, all right, shut up. After the like the 4th or 5th one, you're kind of like, shut up, dude. Let's just move on. But when McAfee's good and he's dialed in and everything, he's good. I think the drama's gonna be there. I'm looking forward to it. I think the crowd just really, the crowd has a real connection for McAfee. I mean, I guess we will see this as he's walking out to the ring right now. We'll see, you know, how much the crowd gets behind him in this. But McAfee and Gunther, I'm looking forward to.
I want to see his soul leave his body when he gets chopped. That's all I ask for in this match. It's a low bar. Let's see if they clear it. But in the meantime, while we're waiting for it to start, Vader Club this week from 1995, and I'm realizing how much, even though I was in college, I didn't get to watch as much wrestling as I would have liked. How that 91 to 95 period is, while I love the 80s stuff from Jim Crockett, 91 to 95 is possibly my most fun time in wrestling. Dan Severn versus Tarzan Goto for the NWA Championship in a time where the NWA Championship was I'll give you a little backstory here. You remember we had the night the line was crossed with Shane Douglas screwing over Dennis Coraluza in the ECW arena and stuff. So Coraluza and Cornette, who was still kind of running Smoky Mountain, but it was kind of dying at that point, and others. All right, fine. We have to think about these things. We need to put the belt on somebody who can't get screwed over. How about Dan Severn, who has a lovely head of hair and a manly, manly mustache here?
God, he is just a vibe. For me, Dan Severn is a look, is a vibe. I actually sent you another video today, completely unrelated, where I was like, oh, look, it's Dan Severn tossing somebody. Like, there's something classic about the Tom Selleck mustache, really full, thick head of brown hair. Muscly guy. And I love Dan Severn's sort of no nonsense style. This match was, I thought, a lot of fun because in this match, he's going up against a guy named Tarzan Goto. You might not be as familiar with Tarzan Goto. Tarzan Goto actually, in a way, sort of feels like almost like a Tenzan sort of like forerunner sort of thing, like brawling, smashy guy.
I always view him kind of as Abdullah the Butcher type style, but with better mobility.
Yes, a little bit of an Abdullah the Butcher thing.
I enjoy, of course, the parallel razor blade marks that form a big thing of scar tissue on his forehead.
Yep.
Shout out to that.
This is like, especially in terms of Vader Club, we don't do star ratings here, but this is like maybe a 3-star match.
Yes,
but it is so entertaining. This is
a non-hardcore match in the middle of a hardcore King of the Death match tournament, which makes it interesting because they do feel the need to give a nod to it with chairs and stuff, but not quite. It's done smartly.
That's actually what I really like is that, like, it's for me, it's smart hardcore.
Yes.
Like, and what I mean by that is peril and threat to me is much more powerful in wrestling than execution. Execution has to happen to maintain peril and threat occasionally. But I think creating peril, creating threat, creating menace and allowing the mind to imagine what could happen is so powerful. Like using the theater of the mind element of this. So for the example I'd use is when Godot goes and breaks the bottle, right?
Yes.
He
I
is
think
not
there might be water in that bottle. Oh no, it's God. Beer, you dumbass.
Yeah, who is bottling water in glass? Like what? Okay. So like obviously Dan Severn's not gonna get disemboweled by this bottle. So the question is, how is Dan going to get out of this perilous predicament? And to wit, he grabs a chair and he ends up like basically using the chair as a shield against the bottle, which I really dug.
Yes.
And like that to me is smart hardcore wrestling. So like seeing Dan Severn sort of like inadvertently roped into a hardcore match of sorts was a fun twist of the tale. And I actually thought like, once the match got back in the ring too, and we got to Dan Severn busting out some suplexes and stuff, those are real sick. Dan Severn's got a real nice offensive set.
They put over those suplexes, and that's what this match was building towards, were the throws by Dan Severn, and I really liked that. Severn, not the greatest fake knee striker in the world.
No, but those real knees look stiff as hell.
Because they were real knees, and they were stiff as hell.
Yeah, I know. That's why I said those real, like, he doesn't do the big thing with knees. This is just like measure, nail. Yes.
It's like, hey, I'm taking down the knee pad to really lay this in and I'll miss that one. But the ones I have my pads on, I'm actually going full bore into you and killing you while you do this.
Yeah, the wrestling aspects, I got knee pads on.
Non-wrestling things I love. Give me your 90s slap bass, wheedly wheedly wee guitar and synthesizer themes. I love Dan Severn's theme at the end here.
Although it is nothing compared to his WWF theme, which is like one of my his WWF theme is one of my sleeper favorite theme songs in WWF history.
No, but I was enjoying the slap bass.
I
liked the post-match promo in the ring. I did not like the post-match promo out of the ring. I hate, loathe when people are in hardcore battles for their lives and then after the match, hey, he's a professional and he gave it his all. It's like, no, be mad about this, Dan Severn. I want to see you be rageful and whatnot.
Right, like, especially as the NWA champion, to me, it's almost like a, you know, kind of a proto Ring of Honor sort of thing where it's like, he should be like saying like, you know, Tarzan Goto, I gave him a title shot, even though I know his reputation, I know all, I mean, almost heelish.
Yes,
almost heelish, but like, you know, I still gave him a title shot and he chose to degrade the National Wrestling Alliance, degrade the sanctity of this belt. He's not getting another title shot, blah, 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 blah. I will fight him for the IWGP title though.
IWA. Yeah. And of course the time capsule, racial stereotype alert. Yes, these Asian wrestlers, these Japanese wrestlers, they're all men of honor, Chris.
Well, okay, look, that's growth from the sneaky stereotype of the mid-20th century.
Yes, it's better than Jim Ross yelling about the Orientals when Muda and like the Dragon Master are attacking Sting.
Referring to sneak attacks as Pearl Harbor jobs.
Pearl Harbor jobs, yes. Okay, yes, it is. It's an improvement for this.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
We're still in the 90s, though. I mean, right, we're still in the early 90s.
Negative turns to positive, and ultimately, we hope, turns to acceptance. That's my view of the world, Jeff.
Yes, you know, much like the Confederate flag in the 80s was a sign of.
I don't know if you're going to save that one, buddy.
We've been over this argument. I still think mine was valid at some point.
Anyways.
Once we hit the mid-90s and Smoky Mountain's still doing that, it's just like, no, you got to stop, dude. It no longer means what you think it means, guys. But yes.
Yeah, I mean, right. Like, I guess the argument there would be like where it had the meaning you're thinking of is like the boomers and like pre-early Gen Xers, and then by late Gen Xers, where like nihilism and grunge culture comes in, it clearly means something different.
Yeah, once the white trash kind of grew up and grew out of it and could escape the not the suburbs per se, but like the lower middle class of my neighborhood and stuff like that, and they go, yeah, that's not a good idea to associate that kind of a thing with, you know, underclass struggle. Kind of a thing,
or just like generic rebellion.
I hate the government type shit.
Yeah, right. Like, I mean, I think for many people realize there are many other.
We're on a tangent.
There's many other good symbols of rebellion that are less problematic.
Yes. So next week, I don't know. I was looking at Vader Steamboat matches, and they're all pretty good.
Yeah, they are pretty good. Steamboat's a great opponent for Vader.
So I might pick one of those. I was watching one that was taped from a television that had the commercial still in it, and I want to go there and live there right now. But this has been Shake Them Ropes. I'm Jeff Hawkins. You can listen to me on Fight Game Media on Wednesdays at the Dynamite Show about 20 minutes after Paul Fontaine and I go live on YouTube, and it drops in your audio feeds the next day. You can follow me at CrapGame13. You can follow Shake Them Ropes at Shake Them Ropes on X. Chris is going to plug his stuff now.
I make of the music. I teach of the music. I got an album that will be coming out over the summer here. We are down to needing vocals on 6 songs. All of the music is done. It's a 13-song album. I do all of the music. I wrote everything on this album. I am performing everything on this album. I'm very excited about it. Some of the songs have been released in fashions before, but have all undergone dramatic changes. If I tallied up the hours, we're talking, you know, hundreds of hours at this point working on this album. Like a lot of time has gone into this. I'm very proud of it. So that will be up on Spotify. If you're not subscribed to my Spotify right now, do that. Go ahead and do that. I'd like to, you know, goose some numbers up there on the Spotify. Chris Novembrino is my name-o. Find me on Spotify, Chris Novembrino. You can also find me on the Instagram, DOCTOR_NOV. That's Dr. Nov, NOV. If you want music lessons, hit me up there. Otherwise, I think that it's important that everyone flosses at least 3 times a day this week. Come on, let's change it up.
Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is, how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.